Hi, I'm Josh Evans, and this is my show. I'm a loving husband, a proud father, a mediocre guitarist, a fish taco lover, and I love to help organizations fix their cultures. That's right. So if you've ever been a disgruntled employee or you've ever had a disgruntled staff member, I'm here to help you fix it. So I help businesses build the right culture within their organizations to keep their employees engaged and their profits high. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to my show. I'm Joshua M. Evans, and this is a show all about culture, how to fix your organization's culture, how to make it better, or how to leave and find a better organization that has a better culture. So I have a special guest with me today, and this is a rare thing and a rare honor. I have the Hal Bowman. That's right, the teach like a rock star, Hal Bowman. Now, the cool thing about this is Hal focuses specifically on transitioning cultures within school systems. And what makes that so amazing to me is because they have much stricter rules around how they get to actually apply their culture. They have much smaller budgets for changing culture, and they have a very, I'll say, unique dynamic in the fact that they're only educating individuals and then they leave. And then they have new individuals come in and they have to educate them as well. So it's hard to maintain the culture. So Hal, welcome to my show.
Yeah, man. Let's do this.
I'm going to say the really weird thing about this show is we're doing it from your podcast studio. And right. So it's your show, but it's really my show. So
it's all yours.
100%. Oh, thank you very much. So I met Hal on an airplane. And I'm not going to let him tell his story about how he thinks we met, because it doesn't put me in the best light. But at the end of the day, we sat down next to each other on a Southwest Airlines flight, and it turns out we were both in Orlando because of a speaking engagement, and we hit it off. And it turns out we also went to the same university, which is just crazy.
Same music?
Right? Yeah, we were both music majors as well.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It is.
Absolutely. Anyway, so how did you get into – I know you started out as a teacher, but how did you get into really focusing on culture? Because I think early on you were focusing on getting the teachers re-engaged. But then you've made a transition, at least since I've even met you, on really helping campuses shift fully. And how did you find out that and figure out that was the place that you needed to be to make the biggest impact?
Well, you know what, man? It was it wasn't as big of a transition as I thought it might be. It really just kind of happened just naturally, in that natural flow of things, because when I focus on teachers and getting them not just inspired, but getting them really connected with what they want for their kids and why they're there, the next step is focusing on that classroom and positioning themselves as a classroom leader rather than talking about classroom management and that silly stuff. And that's all about classroom culture.
Well, and I love the fact that you said, no, it's not about classroom management. It's about classroom leadership, which is like, hey, follow me. We're going somewhere. We're going on an adventure.
We must be going somewhere. Well, we got a leader.
Yeah, well, and the best – yeah, that's lovely. And the best people I've seen in corporate America is the exact same thing. It's like, no, we don't hire managers. We hire leaders, right? Your goal is to show them the way, right? Not to tell them what to do.
Right.
I think that's a neat shift in education as well. So tell me a little bit about how you do that. What is your ideal perfect situation where you can come and not only have the biggest impact on the teachers and the administrative staff, but also on the students?
Well, you know what it is, man. So when we started first with just working on classroom culture and classroom leadership, what really the foundation upon which the whole idea is constructed is making a shift from a rules-based management program where there's, you know, that's rule number two. I said, sit down, you know, and really creating a classroom created on core values that we discuss with our kids. And talk about like this family that we want to create. Like, this is the first time in a kid for most kids, when they show up in that kind of a teacher's classroom, they have been dictated how to live and what to do and when to do it and where and everything. But this is the first time that they can really sit down and have a conversation with, let's design the family that you really want, the one that you really deserve and you have in your life. We can, what I always tell my students is, listen, man, you've got two jobs. Job number one is know what you want here. Job number two, tell me. My job, make it happen. And I am really good at my job. So we talk about we talk about it daily. Let's talk about this place that we want to grow up in together. Because I'm growing too, man. We're all growing. And so my job is to create this space. And that way we always bring it back to the values that we create. Now listen, man, in my classroom, just like in the workplace, there's definitely procedures and policies and in school they call them rules. You know, be on time, don't talk when someone else is speaking. And of course I have those posted, but I don't talk about them. I talk about the underlying value because that's where the pain is.
Like respect for others.
Right. So I don't say, hey, man, please don't speak when I was talking. Don't interrupt me. It sounds more like, hey, brother, isn't this the place that we talked about where we want to respect one another? Thank you.
I love it.
Because that's where the pain is. So that's, you know, with kids and adults, it's the same thing, man. Like, it's fun to break a rule. That's a blast. But to break a commonly held value among a group of people that love each other, that's the pain.
So are you suggesting that teachers kind of bring their students together in their classroom? Hey, let's develop together.
We're going to talk about it starting on day one.
I love it.
And we talk about it every day. So at the beginning, so, you know, I always have to tell my principal, hey, listen, it's not going to look like much. Not going to, for a week, for 2 weeks sometimes. You're going to get nervous because you're thinking, what is he doing in the hallway? Why are they outside? How come they're not in the classroom to teach? I'm going to pass everybody up. I tell teachers, look, you can invest a lot up front or you can pay dearly every day of the school year. So I'm going to invest a lot of time in my culture, in my leadership up front so that we have freedom to do all the stuff that we need to do in the classroom for the rest of the school year. But yeah, man, you know, we talk about it. We have this like social contract. You know, we talk about, okay, you guys talk to me. How do you want me to treat you? It's really important to me that I know this specifically. And I write it down as we're having conversation. And I'm just facilitating conversation. How do you want me to treat you? I want you yelling at me. All right. How come? Why, what if I can't get your attention? Or what if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing? How can I better handle that? And they'll tell you, man. And I said, okay, well, sounds like it's important that you guys want to be respected. Is that right? Great. I'm writing that down. I got it written down. I'm going to do my best. And then we go through this whole thing and but what that does, it gives me the right to now when it's time to talk about how I want them, I've now earned the right to ask them to treat me a certain way.
And it's derivative of their vernacular, right? So you're already using their words that they've used to describe it.
Right.
Ooh, that's
and
smart.
Sometimes we have to give them the word. Like they don't have the depth and the breadth of vocabulary of an adult, but they'll have a definition. Man, I'm a people touching my stuff and getting them on my business and taking my things out of my back. But hey, man, it sounds like you want to be respected. That's what I'm saying. Clearly.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when I do that, then it now has earned me the right to ask for exactly what they've asked of me. I've earned the right to ask it of them.
That's great. And I think it's funny that you put it this way because I think a lot of organizations, they don't have rules, right? They have policies.
Right.
Right. Procedures.
Yep.
Modes of operation. They have those sorts of things, but they are not necessarily brought together and built on core values. I had an interesting conversation recently in my podcast with the guy that started Big Joe, those pool floaties and everything
that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're huge on core values. And he goes, no, I figured out if we just build out just three real solid core values for our organization, then anybody else that comes on board can look at those and make a decision in any situation based on those.
Right.
So they know what to do. Right. To not only serve us well, but to serve their fellow employees and to serve the clients well. And it's all based literally just on core values. Like, we don't need a huge handbook because it literally says right there what you're allowed to do and not do. And if you can run everything through that filter, we're never going to have a problem.
Right. And we can do this on a micro, you know, one-on-one, a little bit less micro, more macro on a classroom, but we can do it in terms of the scope of the whole campus and a school district. Man, there's a school I worked with. I believe they're in New Mexico. This is probably 6 or 7 years ago. We talked about core values, and man, they took it to the next level. They changed it to their core pillars. The pillars of their school, and they work with their students. They work with their teachers, and the teachers work with the students, and they came up with the pillars of acceptance and respect and accountability. And when you walk in their school, the reason they call them pillars, because down the main hallway, they have 7 pillars. And it is this huge word accountability, this huge word respect. And every kid had a Sharpie. Every kid signed it. And when they have guests come into the school, if you're going to participate somewhere in a classroom, whether you're a substitute teacher or a guest speaker for a class, you got to sign all the pillars before you can go into the classrooms.
I'm getting chills. It's a contract.
Yeah.
Like it's not even just a verbal anymore, right? This isn't just an agreement. Like you've signed a contract.
And they have kids that have been like their student council members. I think it was student council officers that if you're coming into the school, they call the student council president or whoever's in charge that week, you know, they'll take turns and they've been trained and they give you a little quick lesson in what respect means in that school. Here's a Sharpie. If you're up for that, if you're down with respect, go ahead and sign the pillar. If not, that's cool, but you can't stay.
And so now they're empowering the students
to
not only carry on, right, these pillars that they have or these values, they're empowering them to hold others accountable.
For sure.
How powerful is that?
Like, it's crazy.
How can we make this? Now I want to shove this down the throat of every corporation that I work with. How do I make this work? How can I do it?
And now it comes in because when they have eighth graders coming up in the summer, the summer freshman camp, you know, it's a smaller district. They probably have, I'm going to guess, 120, 150 freshmen coming in. But that's one of the things is they all go through with their – and now there's next year's seniors leading a lesson right there at each one of these pillars. And so now there's thousands of signatures on these pillars of all these kids have gone through school.
That's amazing. I mean, it's indoctrination, but that's what you need, right?
Right.
I mean, how many – and I'm always trying to take it back to the corporate world just because that's where I live. But how would this look like? Because instead, if you think about onboarding, right, corporate onboarding, what do they do? They'll take a person, like they'll sit them down in front of a computer and be like, now take all these tests, right? This is how to properly deal with this. This is how to properly do that. Like drugs are not allowed in the workplace and you got to make sure that you respond to emails within a, you know, whatever format.
All day.
Oh my God.
It's a fine line between onboarding and waterboarding.
Yeah. It's fine. Well, waterboarding in Guantanamo Bay, it sounds like a lot of fun if you know little about either one of those things.
Yeah. Man, and then to answer your question about how we do on that school-wide is what I do, you know, I have an event called Be the One. And I've done those events where, as a speaker, you've done them too, where you show up and they put all the kids in the room and – or maybe they give me 9th and 10th for one time and 11th and 12th or 6th one period, 7th one period, 8th period, or I do this whole big show for the kids. And I, you know what? I really at some point had to be really honest with myself and say, look, we had a lot of fun. That kids were hugging, high-fiving. We had great music. I told great stories. But is this a better school? Is this a different place as a result of that event? And like when you really sit with that and think, if I'm really honest, I don't know. And what it was, man, the big defining moment for me was I was out of school. I did my thing. I was staying an extra day that night. On the news the next day, then the following day on the news, it was so big that it was ahead of food fight at that school. And then a fist fight broke out and we just loved each other and swayed our arms back and forth. There ain't no mountain
right
high
after
enough.
You.
No, it happened the next day. Yeah.
Were you the catalyst? For
yeah.
It?
No, I wish. I'm just kidding. But the point is, man, it felt great in the moment. We all hugged, y'all cried, but was it really a different organization and a different place because of that? And I had to say it wasn't, clearly. And so I had to reconfigure how I do things. And I thought to myself, what if I take the most influential personalities on campus and work with those people? So now I'm there is in a single day in about a 12-hour time. The whole goal is to shift culture in a single day. That's the goal, to put it on a new trajectory where it feels different. It's clear that it's different and we have some momentum to keep it going all on day one day. And what I do is I work with educators. I work with all the teachers. I work with the leadership team. We put together smaller groups of adults, but also I work with the most influential personalities of kids.
Do you get like the popular kids?
There's some of them for sure, but we
like
also get
first chair of like the trombone section,
right?
And
we
like
get
student
council. And also student council, and we also get mentoring leaders, academic leaders, athletic team captains, but also we also get those students that are leaders in unsanctioned organizations on campus that don't have a sponsor, like our gangsters, and so because they're leaders too, man. And so
Yeah. How do you identify them? You ask the teachers, like,
teachers
okay,
know who they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we put
which
those
kid together. In red is in charge.
Yeah. So we get like the 60 or 70 kids together. And because my theory is just like everything else, if we get those kids all together connected and moving in one direction, the other 2,000 kids on campus are going to follow along. And they do.
That makes sense. Because now, I mean, you've empowered them to take all this information with them, right? And
right.
Start and lead in that way, even whether it's formal or informal leadership, you've empowered them to lead the way that they need to lead.
Right. And they have stuff to do and they're doing things after I leave. And, like one of the things we do, it's truly about being the one, like being the most influential person in the life of someone. Pick someone. You don't have to tell them. You don't have to sneak up. Hey, man, I'm about to change your life. You just do it,
it never
man.
Works like that.
No,
it?
Just go do that. And so we have these things in place where it's just, I just worked at a school in Fort Bend where you're from. And, we did a thing called Best Week Ever. And what these 60 kids did, they picked two adults on campus, and we split the groups up into a Monday group, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday group. And each group had a day. Like that Tuesday, that's your day. Make it the best Tuesday of their life. I don't know how you're going to do it, but go do it. Anonymously.
Wow.
So that person has no idea what has happened or why. And the reason I do it anonymously is because I tell those kids, I say, listen, man, if Miss Smith or whoever they chose, you know, a custodian or a teacher or a secretary or a food service worker, whoever, the school nurse, if she knows that it was us, that it was you guys, you know what? She's going to remember for a long time. Now, if she never finds out who it was, she'll remember for the rest of her life.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know if it's true. I don't care. Here's why I really do it. The reason I do it is because I want those kids to feel what it's like to give and not expect anything in return.
Like every teacher does.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And that's truly what this thing's about. It's not about the results for you. It's about the results for them. It's not about your little trophy. Look what I did for them. It's helping them and giving to them without expecting anything in return.
It's true. It's altruism.
Yep.
I like that. That's selflessness.
Haltruism.
Do you really?
No.
You should now.
That's my
TM.
.com. Yeah.
Haltruism. No, that's good. No, I like that. I think that's amazing. And I think the great thing about schools, right, is that they all know why they're there.
Yeah. They forget, but deep down inside they know.
Yeah. Well, they started because they, yeah. Right. Well, we can go deeper into that if we want to, but I'm trying to think how I could apply this to a corporate setting because I want that.
Yeah.
But we've whitewashed everything so much in a corporate setting, right? Where people are expected to dress a certain way. They're starting to do that in schools too, right? But people are expected to follow certain rules and procedures and regulations that they have internally. And then all these social norms or expectations that we have as well, right?
So strange.
Like walking in, hi, how was your weekend? Oh, good. How was yours? And like, you know, his weekend was crap, right? You know, yeah. Like this guy, his weekend, like I know, like I follow you on Facebook. I know like you posted some really like subversive stuff, right? Or some really clandestine, like I hate my wife stuff on Facebook. Like don't say your weekend was great.
Right.
But we have these forms we dive back into because it's what's expected of us. And I love the fact that you're forcing people to not only be authentic where they are, to really, I guess, push the bounds of what's expected of them, right? Because how many people do you know that are adults that do just the bare minimum of their jobs?
The vast majority. Outside of education.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, those people are in there for sure, no doubt. But the vast majority of people outside of education that I have known and I have met, and when I've worked jobs outside of education, listen, man, just tell me how I can get paid and let me do that and I'm out of here. But in school, it's a whole nother level.
I think it's flipped. I think in school systems, maybe 10% are right. Cadillac. Maybe 10%.
Yep.
And in the corporate world, I think only 10% actually care.
Here's the crazy part. This is the mind blower. In the corporate world, if you are one of the 10%, you're going to be rewarded financially for it at some point. In the education world, 100% get paid the same amount. It doesn't matter if you're good, you're bad. What it just matters how many years you've been there. You're making the same thing.
Let me ask you a question. This is me just going to the sky about a question about education. Do you think that we should incentivize teachers for pass rates?
No.
Do you think you incentivize teachers for what their students do after?
No.
Well, how do you quantify a teacher's value, right? Because an amazing teacher in my life, she's worth millions of dollars.
Sure.
At least in my mind, right?
Yeah.
A terrible teacher is worth, you know, two pennies. Right. How do you quantify? Everybody agrees that teachers should be paid more money. But do you think that there should be differences in pay for what teachers are contributing?
No, I think just if we had a pay that was more representative of the difference that they make, I truly believe that people should be paid in direct proportion to the value they bring to the world. And if we're paying teachers in direct proportion to the value that they bring to the world, we're going to have a whole different kind of crew showing up for this job that is going to eliminate some of the stragglers in this program. I don't even think that whole merit pay thing it would never be an issue.
If you're getting
paid, it could never work. First of all, because man, if you look at a kid like here, let's look at, Marisha comes into class. I'm thinking about a student I had, her name's Marisha, and she comes into a class and she's phenomenal, phenomenal at biology. She loves it. She's performing at a level that is just exceptionally high. And you know what? I'm teaching her. We have a curriculum. It's the same curriculum for everybody. And she's already there. And she's just bumping along that on that path, on that curriculum that, that we're delivering in that school. Six biology teachers were all teaching the same thing on the same day, everything, right? Now, I've got another kid. James comes in. And James struggles academically, struggles with everything. He doesn't really understand scientific concepts. His brain isn't wired that way. By the way, that kid right now is making crazy money flipping shoes on eBay. Now, that dude, more happy, more successful than the whole class combined. All right, now that dude is struggling, but he's working crazy hard. Exceptionally hard. He barely passes. I actually have to help him with a few points every 6 weeks so he'll pass. So he's getting 70s and 72s and 74s and whatever and working crazy hard. Mauricia, now who am I to say that I should get paid? I didn't do anything. She just showed up like that, man. This kid, I worked crazy just to get him to pass. He worked crazy. How can we figure out a monetary value system where we're going to, I just don't get it, man. I don't think it's possible. Hmm. And by the way, the kids I do best with are gangsters, like kids that really struggle and they come from really challenging home life.
You know, the best room for growth, right?
Those are my kids. I don't want to teach at the Woodlands High School. Forget that place. I'm not going to shine there. I know teachers that are there.
So my show's big with the Woodlands, so we're going to have to edit that out and come back. And be like, Woodlands is great.
No, I'm joking.
It's not. Nobody in the Woodlands knows about me. It's no,
but those teachers are there. Those are their kids, and they do exceptionally well with those kids. I don't identify with those kids. I don't want to teach those kids. It's not who I am. It's not what I do. But if we had some sort of merit-based pay, I'm sure they would make way more than me simply because – their kids get outperform my gangsters.
I want to shift. What are your thoughts on private school education versus public school education?
Hey man, I think
if you don't want to talk about it,
I'm good. I just don't really think about these things because you know why. But I can think about it in front of you. I don't care.
Yeah,
sure. What I do is I'm a public school guy simply because that's what I know. That's what I do, and I'm not the guy that come up with how things should be or how things could be. They got people for that. My expertise is, hey, this is what it is. this is the cards we're dealt. Now let's figure out how to make it amazing with whatever we have right now. Other people can think about policy, how to make changes at the state and government. Just not me. I don't care. Just tell me what we have, and I'm gonna tell you how to make it great.
Well, see, and that's I'm a public school guy, yeah. Born, raised, went through public school, public university, the whole thing. My wife, opposite, right? She was private school.
Yeah.
And private university too. And I know her education cost literally 10 times what mine did.
Yeah.
But I'm in that conversation now with my wife. I'm like, okay, what's the real benefit, right? Like I don't know. It's just interesting to me. That's the only reason I bring it up because you're in the world and you would know more. So.
Yeah. I don't know a lot about private school. I just don't. They don't send their teachers to me. They don't hire me. Oftentimes they don't. I've even been to a public school and I'm doing my thing and one of the worst events ever. And there's no connection with the teachers, no connection at all. And let me tell you something, brother, I've done this a long time and I'm pretty good. And I have some markers in my show within the first 10 minutes where I can kind of judge where we're going and everyone falls flat. And there are just, where there's a punchline or there's a point I make and I can just see. And
crickets.
Nothing. And I'm like, what is going on? And I have no idea what's going on. Like, I can't figure it out. And at lunch, I'm in their hallway and I'm looking at their panoramic pictures of their senior class, which has the teachers, administrators, the senior class, everybody, not one kid of color. And then I look at their National Merit Scholar list, and there's a whole lot of kids on that. And they have their ACT 30, but the kids got above a 30 on the ACT. And like the amount of names is shocking. And I realize, oh, my kids don't go to school here. They don't even know what I'm talking about.
Oh, wow. They didn't have the struggle. They don't have the problem. That's interesting.
No.
Do you focus more on
regular kids?
Regular kids.
A school that is a typical school with a whole bunch of kids that don't want to be there. That's a typical school.
Yeah. Absolutely. Any kid would rather be doing anything else.
Yeah, man. Because if you think about like a typical school, like here it is. And, you know, people, no one talks about this except for Bill Gates. And that is the dropout situation in America. So we get about 50% dropout.
Really?
Yeah, man. You can call any one of these districts, any one of these suburban districts, call them up on the phone and say, hey, how many graduating seniors did you have last year? And they're going to give you a number. Say, how many students you have in your kindergarten program last year? That's going to be about twice as many graduated in every district.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the question is, they ain't all homeschooling. There's a few of them, but they ain't all homeschooling. So we lose them. So when you think about who schools really work, so if you think about schools really working for the top 10%, like that's what we always talk about, landing in the top 10%. That ain't the top 10. That's the top 5%. Because we're going to have half the kids left over. So so when we're looking at it, it just doesn't work for the vast majority of people. There's about 50% can stick it out and they're going to graduate. But does that mean it's really working for them? I don't think so. Mm. But what we get are a whole bunch of employees. They'll do what they're told.
Wow. Yeah. Well, they're just manufacturing drones for the corporate America.
Yeah. But, and here's the crazy part. There's not
that
one
sounded
single,
so dark when I said it and yeah, you moved away from the microphone.
There's not one single teacher that wants to be a part of it, but we know like these are the rules that we have with which we play the game. And if I'm here to make a difference in the life of a kid and I'm going to somehow figure out how to use the content of my classroom and the rules of the game to do that.
Right. I mean, they're given the bounds. Like, this is where you're allowed to play in this box. And you can have as much fun or as little fun as you want in that box, right? Which is, getting as many kids as possible to – and especially with standardized testing, right? It changes the way in which they're allowed to teach. But I think if we could treat – if organizations could treat their employees more like teachers treat their students, right? Which is like, I'm trying to empower you. I'm trying to impart stuff to you so you can take this and move with it. Then maybe we'd have less people – apparently it's similar numbers, right? 50% of people at any given organization are looking for another job.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Hey, man, that brings up – I was just on my cast. We talked about a guy I had coffee with, and he works at an oil and gas company. And one of the reason we met is because he listens to my show. His wife is a teacher. She's talked about me. He listens to my podcast. And he thought it would be interesting just to see and chat and maybe even talk to his leadership team and his sales team about the purpose and why we're doing this. Because that's the big question. Like, it's so challenging what we do and how we're micromanaged. The question – like, why? Like, what is the purpose? Like, that's the hard part, is finding the why for me personally. And it was really hard, but then I always go back to this concept I completely believe to be 100% true, is that deep down inside, everybody wants to be the one that makes a difference in the lives of people. And when we started talking about it, and we can kind of find a metaphor with football, and what we got close to that with his why was Belichick. Like, if you look at the coaching tree and Belichick's at the top and all these head coaches that are in the NFL and all these, defensive and offensive coordinators and all these positions, at some point they've come through Belichick. They've been part of his team. And you look at what he's really good at. He's really good at winning, of course, but also what he's really good at is creating amazing leaders. And it is astounding at how many of these head coaches have come through his program. Mm-hmm. So what we talked about in terms of his role in sales leadership, they sell a bunch of pipes. That's great. But really on a deeper level, like when we finally, after 2 hours of talking, finally got down deep into it, what he really loves is the idea of those people leaving his organization and being able to, and becoming a leader in some other organization, and say, that's where I learned it. That's where I honed my skills. That was my mentor. That was the one who changed my life and put me on this trajectory that I'm on now. And for them to pay it forward. Like that is somewhere that's becoming his why, the more we articulate that.
I like that. Well, and I've really just made the connection now, because you're be the one, right, that has a positive impact on another person. And what I've been really focused on recently is realizing that everybody that's in any sort of a leadership or management role, they want to be that leader that they've always read about, right? The mentor, the person that opened the other person's eyes, that set them on the right trajectory, right? That gave them tools so they could go shine in their own field. I think every leader wants to be the leader they always read about. Right. They want to be that person. And so it's not always easy, right? It takes work and it takes dedication and it takes a constant re-engagement. right? And revisiting of why you're doing it.
Yeah. As you know, it's kind of like the rock star phenomenon. Everybody wants to be the rock star. You know, like if you know, when you go to a show, like everybody audience has that moment. Oh my gosh, I would love to be that guy. That guy singer, that guy guitar player, that drummer. It's the same thing in terms of a speaker. The vast majority, when they hear a great speaker, they think, "Ugh, I would love to be able to do that." And it's exactly the same thing in terms of influential people in the workplace. Everybody thinks, I would love to have that kind of influence over the lives of others. And it's possible in every role, in every company, everywhere. Everyone can have that role where there's somebody in the company that they can be the most influential person in their life. Deep down inside, everybody wants it. We just don't give them opportunities.
I think you're right. I think there's a stoicism that's gone along with the business world that allows them to kind of like, no, that's just my professional self. That's not myself.
Right.
And it gives them, I guess, carte blanche to not care, but they want to care. Everybody wants to care on day one. They do care. And it's easy to let the day-to-day grind and the minutia kind of pull you away from what really matters.
Yeah.
And the second you take a step back from the table of empowering other people, right? It becomes this closed circuit where you're like, no, I'm just going to have to do it myself. And you're just going to have to listen to these rules and you're just going to have to follow these policies. And it becomes a very managerial role instead of a leadership role.
It's gross.
It is.
No one wants to do it. That's why they feel miserable about themselves and they go home. They don't like doing this. And they know it. They don't like to do it. You know, there's these basic human needs that everybody has. Like people want to feel a deep sense of connection. They want to feel loved. They want to feel significant, that they matter, that this place is a different place because I am a part of it. They want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And in school, like that, like there's so much that we learn from corporations, but I really believe there's things happening in schools that corporate organizations could learn from as well. That being one.
No, and you're right. And I think in schools, it's more on the surface because it can easily become an emotional thing because they literally are helping the youth of America, right? Helping children form new ideas and become empowered and understand things and learn. And it's an amazing thing. It's easy for people outside of an educational role to call it in, just to phone it in, and then half-heartedly do their work because they're still getting paid,
yeah.
Right? And the funny thing is, we talked about pay a second ago, but in the corporate world, after a certain level, money is a very poor motivator.
What is it, like 85 somewhere?
It's more, it's like 67, 68.
Yeah.
Which is a fine, it's a fine salary. But after that, people need more. Otherwise, they're just going to look across the street.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we've ingrained people to become mercenaries in the corporate world, right? So like literally, I can do this job. You give me a list of tasks and functions and responsibilities. I'm just going to do those things. These are the functions I'm going to do, and you're going to give me a paycheck. And then yeah. If somebody comes along from across the street from our competitor and says, hey, I'll give you a little bit bigger stack of money to do those same functions, well, I'm just going to take this stack of money because I have no emotional tie to right. This organization. I think the corporate world could really take a lesson from the educational world
sure.
and realize that the second you start imparting emotional
yep.
connection to the work that they're doing, then people aren't going to leave for more money.
No, right? Man.
They're
going to
stay because they have that desire.
Yeah. That, you know, making that connection and what we call in the education world and I hope in the corporate world is really creating the family, and creating a family is built on emotion and purpose. And so that's why, like, you know, when people leave and we always say, it's really easy to quit a job. Hell, it's freaking fun to quit a job, but it's really painful to quit a family. I've left a job. I've left and it was awesome every time. I loved leaving those jobs, but the last one I left, it took me 3 times to go into the office and to quit. It was that painful.
Did you do like you half walking? You're like, no, you turned around and left.
Well, what it was is I was leaving to do my speaking thing and go on the road full time. And, you know, I went in there and she's looking at me, the principal, Barbara. I said, hang on a second. I went and called my wife. I said, hey, you realize I'm about to be unemployed. You get that right. Get your ass in there and you quit that. All right.
That's awesome.
I had to leave. I went and called her again. Get back in there. Get some balls and go quit.
It was all on the same day that you walked
yeah,
in.
Yeah, in the same session. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Give me just a second. Yeah, and I went back in. Yeah. And, you know, but that that's what I love when I see on social media these parties and tears and hugs when – not when somebody's just retiring, but when – maybe a teacher's a guy's wife got a job and she's you know, works for a pharmaceutical and he got a new territory and they have to move to Minneapolis, and to see those teachers and his family at that school where he teaches and people are crying and they have a party for him, and like that's the way it should be.
So, and I read something recently, don't create an organization where people want to stay. Create an organization where people never want to leave.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, this has been a lot of fun, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on my conversation. It's just, it's neat to get a different perspective like that. It really Absolutely, is. Brother. You're awesome, Hal.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. All right, everybody, go out there and be Haltruistic to the other humans. .com. And thank you again for joining my show. Once again, I'm Joshua Evans. If you want to check me out on any of social media, it's @enthusiasticyou. Have a fantastic day.